So we'd like to welcome all of you to this morning party. Every day we do with parties. Our party starts at about 4:30. So then this is a semi-final to this morning's party. After this segment of the party, then we're going to the final segment, which is Mahaprasad. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Cheva Narottam Devim Saraswati Datsa Tattva Jaya Madhira Nastapaye Subhadrisu Nityam Bhagavata Seva Bhagavati Uttama Sloke Bhakti Bhavaiti Naistiki. So Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Step 4. 21. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, title of the chapter 9 of the second canto, of the first canto, is The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev. Today's text is text 21. Sarvatmanah Samudrisu.
Sarvatmanah Samudrisu.
Yadhyayasyanaham Krite. Tatkritam mati veshanyam
Tatkritam mati veshanyam
Nirapadhyasya na kachit
Nirapadhyasya na kachit
Sarva atmanaha
Sarva atmanaha
Of one who is present in everyone's heart
Of one who is present in everyone's heart
Samadrisaha
Samadrisaha
Of one who is equally kind to one and all
He
certainly.
Advayasya
of the absolute. Anahankrite.
Anahankrite.
Free from all material identity of false ego.
Free from all material identity of false ego.
Tatkritam.
Tatkritam.
Everything done by him.
Everything done by him.
Mati,
Mati,
consciousness.
Consciousness.
Vesanyam,
Vesanyam,
differentiation.
Differentiation.
Niravadyasya, free from all attachment.
Free from all attachment.
Never. Quachit,
Quachit,
at any stage.
At any stage.
Translation of the report by the Bangles. It's confounded child. Chila. Abhajana Vina Bhakta Vedanta Swami Papa Mahalas Ki
Jai
Chira Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart. He is equally kind to everyone and he is free from the false ego of differentiation. Therefore, whatever he does is free from material in a bright. He is equibalanced. Please kindly respond to it. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart. He is equally kind to everyone. And he is free from the false ego.
And he is free from the false ego.
Of differentiation.
Differentiation.
Therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. He is equibalanced. Purport. Because he is absolute, there is nothing different from him. He is Kevali, there is nothing except himself. everything and everyone is a manifestation of His energy. And thus, He is present everywhere by His energy, being non-different from it. The sun is identified with every inch of the sun rays and every molecular particle of the sun, of the rays. Similarly, the Lord is distributed by His different energies. He is Paramatma, or the Super Soul present in everyone as the supreme guidance. And therefore, He is already the chariot driver and counselor of all living beings. When He therefore exhibits Himself as chariot driver of Arjuna, there is no change in His exalted position. It is the power of devotional service only that demonstrates Him as the chariot driver or the messenger. Since He has nothing to do with the material conception of life, because He is absolute spiritual identity, there is for Him no superior or inferior action. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, He has no false ego. And so He does not identify Himself with anything different from Him. The material conception of ego is equibalanced in Him. He does not feel, therefore, inferior by becoming the chariot driver of His pure devotee. It is the glory of the pure devotee that only He can bring about service from the affectionate Lord. Om Gyan Timiranse Gyan Jana Salakaya Saksu Om Pritam Jail Despise Si Gurve. So Chaitanya Mano Pista Stafetam Yena Bhutu Swayam Rupa Kadavya Dadadiswa Padantika. Vandu Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Suhodhita Gududhaya Puspavantu Chitu Chandu Tamam Vanchakalpitare Pacha Kripa Sundaya Pacha Patitam Pavam. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Sadhu Gaur Bhakti Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna
Hare
Rama Hare Rama
Rama Rama Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna
Hare Rama
Hare Rama Rama Rama
Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna 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 Hare Rama
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pisaya Potale Simati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamani Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaurvani Vichari Nebhya Sesha Sanjavadi Pachatya Vishnistana. So, again we'd like to welcome you for sparing the time. Today's Saturday mornings are always very busy because people are preparing to go to different parties. But you wanted to party with Krishna, good. So, this is a very interesting text because it's giving, the text is delineating, it's giving some express delineation about, you know, the wonderful position of Lord Krishna. Krishna, no one can equal Krishna. And sometimes we tend to undermine Krishna. So he declared in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sadas Prabhava, Mata Sarva Bhavati, Iti Matra Pachantima, Buddha Bhava Samavita. People don't seem to understand that Krishna, that little boy, Nanda Maharaj's son, Yasoda's son, come on. Even Lord Brahma was bewildered. So Brahma himself was bewildered because he thought, this little boy, who has become puffed up now. So Lord Brahma makes an experiment to see whether what he perceived was right or wrong.
Research has been there since time immemorial. You know, modern day scholars, they think that they are the ones who are the actual researchers. Even Lord Brahma was a research fellow. And he gave not just, whatever. So Lord Brahma conducted some research to figure out who this little boy is. You know, people were worshipping Krishna, and everybody was eulogizing him and all type of things. A little boy. It's a kind boy. So Lord Brahma, you know, he went to hide Krishna's associates in a cave. So after some time, he wanted to figure out what's going on. And then he saw Krishna with all of these boys and the cows, and they are even having four arms this time around. He could see that. So Lord Brahma surrendered. Forgive me. Doubt. We are always doubting about the position of Lord Krishna. And to doubt for the sake of doubting is meaningless. But there is reasonable doubt. If we do have a reasonable doubt, then we need someone to clear our doubt. We need the scriptures to clear our doubt. We need the sadhus to clear our doubts. And the essential factor here in this text is that we are being made to understand how Lord Krishna is the absolute personality of Godhead, and that he is present in everyone's heart. Lord Krishna also confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita in a number of places. He told Arjuna, "I am Atma Gudakusha." Again, he told Arjuna, "Sarvasya Saham Riri Sanyavistu, Matus Niti, Gyana Apuancha, Vedaisa Savar, Aham Ever Be, Vedanta Kri." Better be the child. He told Arjuna, the Supreme, I am there in each and every one's heart. So in the Prabhupada mentions that Krishna is there as the super soul, or that the Paramatma in our hearts as the guidance. It's not there to check whether we have done sinful activity or whatever. It's not a cop, it's not a policeman. It's there to guide us, lead us the way gradually. Come back to his lotus feet. Krishna doesn't need to be a cop himself. He doesn't need to be a policeman himself. There's so many people who can police us. Why not? So he's there in our hearts. Aham sarvasya. All of these emanations in the material world, they are all coming from Krishna. This is the declaration of the Supreme Lord Himself. So sometimes people think that, oh, this is Krishna, everybody says that He's God, God is worshipping, He's the Supreme. Lord Brahma never said that He's the Supreme. Lord Shiva never said He's the Supreme. Ganesh never said He's the Supreme. Durga never said she's the Supreme. But Krishna declared in the Bhagavad Gita that He is the source of the material and the spiritual worlds. That is the Lord. Lord Brahma said, that is the Lord I worship. Go in them, Adipurusa, Tamaham, Pajan. We worship someone, we quote to someone. Like if you go to the law courts, even the most reputable lawyers, they pay obeisance to the justice. They call the justice, your lordship, is it? Yeah. So, ordinary person is being addressed because of his powers. He could send someone to jail. Imagine someone who is empowered to jail people, who is empowered to send people to Yamaloka. The justice is empowered to do that. He's empowered by the government. Because he's so powerful, see, they call him Lord and Lordship. There's so many laws. Not just only demigods. Even on our planet here, there are laws. A Lord is what? Lord is someone who can kill. Not all laws can create life. It's only one Lord who creates a life. And that is why he is the absolute, the supreme absolute truth. Absolute truth means what? If you have a piece of paper, and then you divide this piece of paper, you tear it into two, you just have half on one side. If you tear it again, you just have a quarter. And if you tear it again, I mean, it just goes on diminishing. There is always a diminishing factor when we divide any material substance. But Krishna, although he says all of us are his emanations, he said we are all his parts and parcels. Mama, Evanso, Jiva Loki, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana. He said, we are all, so if we are all the emanations from him, even the material and spiritual worlds are emanations from him, he's supposed to reduce. You tear this paper, it keeps reducing. This is the nature of material substance. And because Krishna is the absolute, he does not reduce, although so many emanations are coming from him. That's why he's absolute. In a sense, we can say, but it means that we human beings or mothers are also absolute in a sense, because mothers also produce children. But the mothers, when they keep producing children, they deteriorate, they degenerate, they get old. In fact, the more children you produce, the older you can very quickly become. Is it not mothers? Is it false? Oh yeah, and that's why, you know, these days, you know, people don't want to produce many children. Maybe three, they say it's okay. Or some people even one, they say it's okay. Because they want to remain as young, as much, as long as possible, they maintain some type of youthful life. But Krishna, he gave birth to all of us. And he does not degenerate at all. He's absolute. And therefore he is never yoga, ever useful. Ever useful. Who here, okay, the young people, okay, Swas, who do you like? Suppose there is a mall, a shop where you can buy old age. Would you be a customer to that shop? I don't think so. We don't want these things. We don't want. And no young person wants to get old. Yes, it's rather good for non-defeat. But Krishna, because he's absolute, he is never yavana. He is ever youthful. He is Kishore. You know, we have. You know, four stages in development. And so, we find out, Kishore, very fresh. And Yavana is sweet 16. You know, when people are 16, they're very vibrant, they're very attractive. And that is why if you have a daughter who is 16, you have to protect her seriously. Don't let her just move back and forth the street because there's so many horrible guys. Oh yeah. So, Lord Krishna is Yavana, sweet 16. And even the boys, when they're 16, and that is why, like in America, I don't know what the case is, you have not checked the statistics in your country, but in America it's very common, you know, female teachers, they be going to jail like anything for statutory rape.
we have sex with your students. And then, you know, the government comes on them, they put them to jail. So many women are going to jail. And that also destroys their marriages. So, Yavana is a very powerful stage in development. Very attractive. That Krishna is always looking youthful. So, why we don't want to get old? Why? Who can tell me why we don't want to get old? Yes, Babuji's. Why is it that we hate old age? Why? Why we don't want to get old? Yes. Reasoning. This is time for reasoning now. Don't think that you just sit down there and then you let someone be talking. Reason now. You have to think. Yes. Why we hate to get old?
Death is approaching.
Huh?
Because that death is approaching.
Because death is approaching. Good.
Because we are part and parcel of Krishna. So Krishna is Navayovanam. So being his part, part of the Navayovanam, so we don't want to get old because we are qualitatively one with him.
Very good. This is a good point. This is called deep reasoning. Deep thinking. Higher order thinking. So, people don't want to get old. Do you blame them? Yes, Mataji. Do you blame people who don't want to get old? Huh? You don't blame them. Yeah. Correct? I can't blame people who don't want to get old. And that's why people go for plastic surgeries to, you know. And the plastic surgeons, they make so much money because there's so many people who don't want to get old. They want to become like Krishna, now I am. But material energy says, no, you cannot. You must get old. So after the plastic surgery, I know in the case of Michael Jackson. That, you know, after some time the whole team start falling apart and all of that.
Horrible person.
Yeah, you know, this is a disadvantage of modern technology. We want to imitate Krishna, we should accept our position that we are subject to old age, disease, and death. And we should just work very hard to conquer this very undesirable situation. Let's use this lifetime to just conquer this situation. We cannot mechanically try to do otherwise. It's not possible. A lot of people who have all the money, most money, or more money, or so much money, they tried. It never worked. It didn't work. So how much can we try? People have tried it. Why do we have to experiment again? People have already done the experiment. It didn't work. So, Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita that he is there in the, as a super soul. And Lord Krishna mentions that matters me to gyan upon child. Those who want, he gives us remembrance. If you want to forget him, Krishna also facilitates. If we just desire to forget him, he facilitates. Why not? I mean, someone raised a question. So how do we get the Sangha Prasanga? I mentioned desire yesterday.
Yes.
So, yeah, if we desire to always remember Krishna, Krishna will facilitate. If we desire to attain Krishna Prema, Krishna will facilitate. If we desire, whatever we desire, Krishna ultimately is the facilitator. That's the difference between being a facilitator and being a teacher. The teacher comes and downloads all the stuff from his encephalon down to the students. A facilitator comes and says, yes, students, so that's his course. So you know why? You know, people don't want to get old, right? Then one student says, yes, I can try. That is facilitation. So Krishna facilitates The fulfillment of our desires. Whatever we want, He fulfills it. And therefore, we just have to think properly. We have to have proper desires. All of these bodies we have, different material bodies we have, is simply due to cumulative past desires. And so, in this very lifetime, we could strive to engage in devotional service of Lord Krishna and attain His lotus feet. And it's so practical, it's just so practical. Now, we hardly find people who are equally disposed to all and sundry. We will always make some difference. We always create some differentiation. This is mine, this is my child. And that one is not. That one is my niece. That one is my whatever. And this one, why this differentiation? We want to take more care for our own blood relations. So we differentiate. This is my own blood. I give birth. I carried him. I carried her 9 months in the womb. Whether he's a rascal, I love him. Whether she's a rascal, I love him. Every other person, so far they are not from my womb. They're just rascals. Krishna doesn't differentiate it. And therefore, we'll find out He is Sama. He has mentioned Sama Drishu. To be equally disposed is a very high value. Even in the offices, you know, the CEO is not equally disposed to all of his workers. There are people that he's favorably disposed to. Some people become like, you know, some people even sometimes become the victims of circumstance. They render the same service, the same input, but it differentiates. There are some people that he likes and some people he doesn't like. No matter how hard they work, this is... When you see these things in the office, don't think it's strange. Even if you don't find this, then it's strange. And we should appreciate that we find this. We should just understand that this is the nature of material circumstances. Inasmuch as someone is not evolved, is not highly evolved spiritually, these conditions are always there. These conditions are always there, embedded in their consciousness. Differentiation. I remember, I think in additional mathematics, there is also a topic called differentiation. So it's so important that even in the difficult aspects of science, they use that theme, differentiation. It's so difficult to give up. I mean, it's like, you know, the rudiment of our devotional culture, that we are parts and parcels of Krishna, or we are not these bodies. It's so difficult to live it. We can quote Sastra like anything. Are we able to live the very kindergarten philosophy of Krishna consciousness? That is the question. The kindergarten philosophy is that I am not this body. You see where Krishna consciousness is very difficult? We think that Krishna consciousness is very easy, very cheap, but it is difficult. If someone tells you it's not difficult, he or she has not started to practice the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Is Krishna consciousness easy or difficult? Huh?
Very difficult.
Very difficult. But we should not meet people on the street and tell them, you know what? Krishna consciousness is very difficult.
we should tell them that Krishna consciousness is very easy. If they come and take Sansara of Krishna and investigate this by themselves, and then they figure out how that, you know, the intricacies of Krishna consciousness or glories of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Who doesn't know, we should not discourage people. Okay? Yeah, so we are all supposed to be missionaries. It's not just the sannyasis who are traveling around, or brahmacharis who are carrying, going to distribute books, or grihasthas who are distributing books, buying books and distributing to help to spread the mission, that are missionaries. Every one of us is supposed to be a disciple. A disciple connotes one who is disciplined, one who goes about to discharge the duties of a preacher or a missionary. So everyone who has taken initiation is a disciple, and those who are aspiring to be initiated, they are disciples to be, and we have to understand the commitments, the duties. And so, Krishna is equally disposed to everyone. He does not make differentiations. He doesn't say that, oh, this is a Caucasian, this is an African American, this is a Red Indian, and this is that, or this is a Hispanic. But we always differentiate. We always differentiate. And this is because we are conditioned. We are conditional souls. So, in the Prabhupada also, Prabhupada mentioned about different energies. Krishna operates by his different energy. Parasha Shakti, Vipita, and Sweet. Krishna has Parasha Shakti, different type of energies. But those energies, they work in wonderful ways. And so, Krishna does not personally need to come to the material world to kill demons. But why does he come? What is the other basic factor that motivated Krishna to come? He wanted to give pleasure to his devotee by dint of his pastimes. If it is just killing of demons, Lord Shiva can just, Lord Brahma even alone can just wreak havoc. Even Lord Shiva alone could wreak havoc. But the idea of his coming was to be able to give pleasure to his devotees. And he enacted different pastimes that we can never forget. I'll give you one example. I remember one time, so Krishna has requested the gopis to go and take some blessings from Dhruva Samoni on the other side of the Jamuna. And then the Jamuna River is separating them from the Dhruvasa. So they asked Krishna, what to do? How do we cross the Jamuna? So Krishna told them that, when you go to the bank of the Jamuna, you just chant this mantra and the Jamuna will open up for you and you'll be able to cross. So when they went to the bank of the Jamuna, who remembers what the mantra that Krishna asked them to chant? No, you don't. Okay. Another person? Any other person apart from that brahmachari? What's your name? Huh? Oh, you are the... Oh, this is my friend. Oh, my God. This Facebook is very it's very deceitful, you know. You see your friend, even you can't figure out. Okay, besides Vaikuntha Murti, I want someone else to figure out. What was the mantra that Krishna asked them to chant? Amen. If you don't know, ask the ladies to try. And if the ladies say, then don't claim that you're superior to the women. Yes. Anyone? What is the mantra that Krishna asked them to chant when they go to the Jamuna? On the cross. Ladies, anyone? How do you call your ladies here? Is it Matajis? Some people, they don't like to be called Matajis. Some people, they say,
In Mauritius, we are Matajis.
Okay. So, Matajis, yeah, please. This is very, very bashful. Yeah.
So yes, Matajis can. Anyone tell us? This is having to do with the gopis, so at least Matajis, they should know.
I tell you one thing about the ladies or the Matajis in Detroit Temple. In Detroit Temple, each time I go there to give a class, like on Sunday, you ask them, normally I do that, and I put questions across as I'm giving the talk. So then you ask the question to the men, you don't see any single hand. The same question you put to the Matajis, so you see so many hands. So then, you know, it occurred to me that the Matajis in Detroit, they are more knowledgeable than the men. And then one gentleman, he gave a reason for it. He said, we go to work and work all through the day, and we come back at the night, and we don't even have time to read. But, you know, they stay behind, so after cooking, serving their babies, they just, you know, they devour the scriptures, they read the scriptures, and so that's why they're very, they're very knowledgeable. Which is a good reason. I hope that in Mauritius also the ladies are reading, especially those who are not working, those who are just at home taking care of the babies and family. Yeah, so we have to engage ourselves. Okay, Bhagavata Murti, tell us. What is the mantra that Krishna has them to chant?
If Krishna is a perfect brahmachari, then please allow us to pass.
Yeah. Krishna just told them that, you know, tell Jamuna that Krishna is a brahmachari. So the gopis said, what? Brahmachari? Come on. You want to cross the Jamuna? They say yes.
Guess so.
Go try it. If I'm not a brahmachari, the Jamuna will not open up for you. isn't this amusing? More amusing than, you know, hearing of killing of a demon? Majority why he came, this is it, to give pleasure to his devotees by enacting different type of wonderful fasting. So they went, they chanted this mantra, Yamuna Okuna. So after meeting Dhruva Samuni, after everything, all the transactions and the blessings and all this, so they're coming back and they ask Dhruva, what to do to cross to the side of the Yamuna? So what was the mantra that Dhruva asked them to chant? Yes. Can someone try? No. But thank you very much. At least there's some trial there. Yeah, any other lady, any other matter just to try? We should read these books. Especially these wonderful stories, pastimes. We should read. They are very purifying. Can someone else help us? The men? You know what? When they went to meet Dhruvasa Muni, they brought loads and loads of prasadam because Dhruvasa can eat. Dhruvasa is a sadhu who is very powerful. But after feeding Dhruvasa, and after getting their blessings, they were to go. And then they asked Dhruvasa, how are we going to cross? Then Dhruvasa mentioned that, you know, just tell Jamuna, when you go to the back of the Jamuna, we are coming from Dhruvasa, they are very austere sadhu. Who doesn't eat? Again, they were bewildered. We just fed this sadhu so much of prasada. How would he dare tell us this? We just fed him all of the prasada we brought, he finished everything. But they remember, you know, what happened with Krishna's situation. So they didn't challenge Dhruvasa, they just went. And then they chanted a mantra and then the Yamuna opened up again. So this is it. What even seems to be like a joke? What seems to be irrelevant? What seems to be
pure falsehood. And spiritual culture is absolute reality. 1 minus 1 is equal to 0. Material mathematics, is it not? 1 minus 1 on the spiritual plane is equal to 1. This is why Krishna is absolute. And so those who are associated with Lord Krishna, it is very difficult for us to figure out with our mundane brains why they do what they do, how they do what they do. Because they are closely associated with Krishna. And so we find also in the case of Durvasa, he was so powerful that even after eating all those prasadam that these gopis brought, he told them that, you know, he doesn't eat. And they repeated that mantra, and Yamuna gave way. So Yamuna is a judge. Who are you? Huh? This is a typical experiment. You want to see whether Durvasa doesn't eat. Okay, so repeat this mantra. You think Durvasa went to influence Yamuna? No. So these are the beauties of Krishna Lila. Amusing, stimulating scenarios that will simply generate laughter therapy. You know, laughter is therapeutic. And so just by hearing the wonderful pastimes of Lord Krishna, we'll feel very happy, we feel very blissful. That's the major reason why Krishna appeared to enact these wonderful pastimes. So, Krishna is so merciful. And in the material world, although he left his form behind, the form of his deities. So we should not think that, oh, Krishna has left the planet and he's no longer there. No, he's always there. He's there as the deity. He's there as the super soul. And therefore it is important for us to make ourselves available to get the message of the Lord. And his different energies are working very wonderfully. Without him having to make any struggle, everything goes on perfectly well. The wind is blowing out of fear of Lord Krishna. Indra has to pour down rain out of fear of Lord Krishna. The sun has to shine. So there is no lacking in Krishna's universal administration. There's no lacking. It's not a question of someone did not come to work today. And this job was not done. But the other job wasn't done. Where is this person? Getting fired. He didn't do his job. All of these processes are also there, and they are being conducted by Krishna's multifarious energies in amazing ways. And when we take proper shelter of Lord Krishna, we can understand things in a proper way. In as much as we follow what Prabhupada has given to us. So Krishna consciousness is very sweet. And what makes it sweet? Krishna. Because Krishna is Natura. He's sweet himself, sweet personified. You know, sometimes, you know, you call Krishna sweet, and people wonder, how sweet is he? Yeah, he's sweet. If you taste his holy name, then you really can feel the taste of Krishna. But that even is so difficult for us to do. And therefore, it's important for us to simply adopt or follow the process of bhakti, which begins with
hearing, chanting and hearing Krishna's wonderful pastimes, wonderful glories. How many people here know about the Hare Krishna Mahamantra? Yeah, the way that we can really relish Krishna and feel that sweetness is in that same mantra. In the Haridam Chaitanya, it is explained in different stages of chanting. And gradually one evolves to a point where even to eat becomes a problem. Because, a number of people, they don't seem to understand that Krishna is in His holy names. The holy names of Krishna is not different from Him. Why is it not different from Krishna? Because Krishna is absolute. For us, our picture and our personality, they are different. Krishna's picture and His personality, they are not different. This is absolute nature. And the way we can really appreciate these qualities of Lord Krishna is to engage ourselves in devotional service. When we do this, then we can come to realize how He is the absolute personality of Godhead, how He is present in everyone, present in everyone's heart, how He is equally disposed to everyone, how He is free from ahankar. Ahankar is the biggest element to penetrate through in the material universe. Ahankara keeps us bound up to the material world. Of all the elements, ahankara is the biggest material element. And so it's the same ahankara that pushes us into trouble, makes us run into problems. Ahankara makes us to even identify with our cars. I remember in Nigeria sometime, when I was preaching in Nigeria, we were going for Harina. And then, some guy hit this guy, it's a new car, and then some mini bus driver hit this guy from behind. And he came down on the road, he parked his car, and he said, "You hit me! You hit me! You hit me!" Yeah, they identify him with cars. That's how powerful the anchor is. So this is a difficult situation that we are facing. This incarceration that we have been put into, it is very difficult. Someone's identifying himself as a man, one is identifying himself as a woman. This is a problem. I remember, shall I tell you a brief story before we leave? You know Mira, right? Mira. You heard about Mira. So one time Mira was, she was also a very strong devotee of Krishna. So she was in Vrindavan, at that time Rupa Goswami was there on the planet in Vrindavan, strongly engaged in bhakti. And so Mira requested for her to have a darshan of Rupa. And Prabhupada told the story. And then Rupa Goswami sent a message to her that, I'm saying yes. I don't see women. That Rupa Goswami, I don't give darshan to women. So, somebody or other, Mira responded that, that's a good response. But I thought we are all Prakriti, and Krishna is the only Purusa. How come we are not saying that? Suppose it. Rupa Goswami said, "You are correct. if someone comes to tell us the proper thing, we get angry. Who are you to tell me this? You're just a woman. How dare you?
Prabhu Swami didn't say that. Yamanaya said, yes, you're right.
So, it is very difficult for us to understand the intricacies of this devotional culture. And the best thing we can do to be able to get some unfoldment is to become more serious in oneself. Then we can understand how Krishna is the only Purusa. We are all Prakriti. If we just understand that Krishna is the only Purusa, we are all Prakriti, our material existence will cease. Material existence will cease, will end. So, this verse is very rich in terms of spiritual information, culture, and the application of the content could really elevate anybody who so desires. So, being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart, he is equally kind to everyone, he is free from the false ego or differentiation. Therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. Material inebriety, drunkenness. We are intoxicated of material energy. People get intoxicated of alcohol and other things. We are intoxicated of material energy. We inebriate it. We are drunk. So, Krishna is also equal balanced. It doesn't, it's not that, you know, today he's happy, tomorrow he's not happy. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. Now he's stressed, tomorrow he's not stressed. Nothing like that. Okay, so let us stop there. Are there some questions, some comments? Yes, Prabhu.
To get a consciousness of service, we need some philosophical analysis.
Because sometimes people think that, why you have to ask me to do that? First, we should demonstrate that we are servants. So when people come, especially new people come, we should serve them. Don't engage them. We should serve them. Prabhupada did that. People who came to him, he would cook and serve them. Personally serve them. And then they realize this elderly person, he's our teacher and he's serving us. We have to pay back. That's the beauty of America. You do something to someone and they wonder, what? You do this to me? No. I'm going to pay back. So you do something bad, also they pay back. So, the point is, we have to demonstrate that quality of service orientation to people when they come. And if they see that the boss is the one serving them, they are just forced to do some service. I mean, if someone just come with their false ego and they say, hey, come here, do this, do this, do this, do this. And they say, what? Yeah, so he walks it that way. We have to be exemplary. Philosophy of Krishna consciousness is so nice. What makes it nice?
it allows us to be exemplars. And when we enlighten the people who come about the fact that we are all servants, even the president of this country is a servant. In fact, even during the political campaigns, they make this assertion that just vote me into power. I tell you, I'll be the best servant to serve this country. I'm the best servant to serve our community. People profess to serve, and they use service also sometimes they use service as a smoke screen for political gains. So the point is, everyone is serving. We just have to analyze the situation for people who come, and they will understand that culture of service. They will give credence to the acharyas who have made these philosophical theses available, that we could just present it to anybody and they will understand. I remember when I was doing my graduate studies, so there was a writing that we were asked to do, and then I just did something on, you know, service. And even after writing that paper, the secretary to the registrar, she read through my work, and she said that, "Evasude, the thing you said is really true, you know? That everybody is actually a servant." Well, give an example that even the husband, he thinks that he's the breadwinner, but he's serving everybody. Husband goes out to work, bring the money to serve the wife and the children. The mother, the wife, serves the husband and the children. Sometimes the mother, if the child has not eaten, she will not even eat. So we are servants. I mean, it's just a matter of giving some analytical value to that concept. And the person will come to realize that we really are really serving. So, and the point is, when we use that service attitude to dovetail it in Krishna consciousness, we get highly purified. And we are making our way out of the material prison. So it's a very good question that you raise. Because it's a thing that you can present to someone and they will just... It doesn't take too much of thinking. It's not abstract at all. It's so relevant, and it's in everyday reality. Everyone is serving. And so when we serve Krishna, we serve the Guru, we serve the devotees who are serving Krishna, we'll get purified. And this is devotional service. Look at the word, devotion and service. This service is devotionally oriented. So we do it with all our heart. We know the objective, for whom we are serving. And when we concentrate on that, we become absorbed in that, then we get greater benefits. So does it make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I've got two or three questions.
Yes.
First one, when you made a contrast between material and spiritual, when you told us the story of Durvasa. So does that mean in our service, you know, whatever we are doing as a service, does it allow us to cheat?
Huh?
Does it allow us to cheat?
To cheat?
Yeah, if we are cheating for Krishna, is that okay?
Oh, no. We cannot cheat for Krishna. Krishna didn't ask us to go and cheat on his behalf. If Krishna wants to cheat, he does the cheating himself. Krishna even steals. But, you know, I remember a case where someone was rationalizing, you know? Krishna is
Krishna also steals. What I intend to do is, I want to steal, but I want to bring all the money to Krishna. It's not true. You're not going to bring all the money to Krishna. It's not going to bring all the money to Krishna. It's simply using Krishna as a smoke screen. How many people walk and they bring all their payroll to the dumb person to take, this is for service to Krishna? Or how many people, after their salary, then they come and put the whole thing inside the donation box? But I've seen someone like that in Nigeria. that guy was completely extraordinary. He was an accountant. At the end of the month, he would bring his all pay slip and give it to the temple president. Please use this for Krishna's service. I said the temple president will give him some money to maintain his, himself and his family for the month. This is not Purana. I saw it. I know the guy. Yeah. But people like that, they are real. I remember he told a story one day. So, some robbers were attacking him. And so, they were coming. Because they had noticed that he passes that road, and they know his profession. They know that he's an accountant for shell company. I don't know whether he was carrying money that day. If they know you that you're an accountant, and if they meet you and if you don't give any money, then they will even kill you. So then he said, they were coming, and they were harassing him. So all of a sudden, he just shouted, Krishna! Yeah, the people they ran. You know, they dispersed. Yeah, so that guy, he used to bring his own paycheck to the temple. It's real to have people like that. So, we don't do anything duplicitous using devotional service as a facade. Temptation may be there, but we should not do it. Because when we do anything like that, it will spoil the reputation of our society if the person is caught. And the person may become an object of incarceration. And therefore, we should do, sadhana bhakti means we should do the things that are authorized by the Vedic scriptures, by the acharyas. And so, that's the meaning of sadhana bhakti. And even for people who have become paramahamsas, they tend to live by the example. Because it is easier for people to emulate those of a higher spiritual status. And therefore, even if we are pure, we should live our lives like sadhakas, so that others can learn from them. But we should never try to do anything that is against the scriptures, against the words of the sadhus, against the instructions of our spiritual master. In that way, we'll be able to maintain devotional integrity for the rest of our lives.
Can I ask my second question?
Yes, please.
Die to live.
Huh?
To die to live.
To if die to live.
Me, uh-huh. What does it mean? I can't explain.
To die to live. Oh, she's asking about this book title of Bhakti Titta Swami, which is about, you know, how to live our lives as if we are dead. Doesn't it? To die to live means to live our lives as if death has come right now knocking on the door. What will we do?
In other words, we have to act. And he uses this word. I remember when he talks to us, especially his managers in those days. He said, you have to be in an emergency consciousness. Emergency consciousness means to die to it. Otherwise, we go about putting off our obligations, our duties, and we're taking tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. But tomorrow never ends. But emergency consciousness implies we have to do it now. I am ready to leave now. Imagine if we do that, everybody here will become a pure devotee in a few weeks. The point is, we refuse to die to live. We refuse to imbibe emergency consciousness. We are so much glued to our own conceptualizations. We are so much glued to our own mundane desires that anything we are told the right thing to do, we think, it's not yet time. I'm still young. I mean, I'll give you an example. A number of young people, and I bet the number of them, the young people who are born in our movement, parents are devotees. They were conceived in this movement. They were born in this movement. They don't chant system. They don't even follow the four root principles. So, opportunities have been given. But, you know, the environmental forces are so intense that they say, opportunity, hey, come here! Leave opportunities to rest. Later. You're too young. Go! Do whatever you want to do first. But death does not wait for our schedule, our timetable. Death is always there. And therefore, essentially, whatever we are doing, we have to understand that death can knock on our door at any time. And therefore, we should be alert to that effect. We should work and prepare our lives in such a way that we are ready to undergo the transition right now. Essentially, that is the meaning of dying to live. You are living, but, I mean, it's like, you know, there's this story the Prophet gave about, you know, this sadhu who encounter different personalities. For the butcher, he was told, don't die, don't live. Because if you die now, it's so horrible. If you live now, it's horrible for the butcher anyway. So, that is completely, that is a good example of opposite of die to live. That's completely opposite. Because nothing is really functional in the person's life. It's like everything is fractured. And it's just going to keep on fracturing. So for them, I mean, to die now is horrible. To live is horrible. Die to live implies that we are ready to die now, or we are ready to live on as if we are dead bodies, deadened to material activities, deadened to material desire, deadened to execution of material desires. So one can live
even for 100 years, 200 years, in that state of consciousness. But that is a very high level of consciousness. I mean, it looks like a very simple thing, but it's a very demanding situation to that degree. It's a very demanding construct. To live our lives as if we are already dead. It's not even in anticipation. It's already gone. It's not in the future. It's already gone. What are the things that I've done? Yes, so except we are able to imbibe emergency consciousness. Otherwise, you know, the intricacies of and the putting off what we should do for Krishna, they become dominant in our lives. It looks like a simple thing, but it's a very deep thing. Any other comments or questions? Otherwise, we have to stop here. Yes.
How do you come to Krishna consciousness?
That's not.
It's not what? Maybe it's irrelevant. Maybe it's irrelevant to the class. But
okay. Did you hear what he asked?
Yes.
well. okay, so let me just give you some rudiment. I became involved in Krishna consciousness in 1984. I moved into the temple in 1984 in February in Lagos. I mean, in Port Harcourt, the oil city of Port Harcourt. And that time I was a young guy who was working with the judiciary as an administrator. And but you know, before then, from childhood, I was very positive about life. I remember when minute I finished high school, my mom called me one day and said, "Hey, you bother everybody with your questions in this family, in this house. You're a big boy now. Go into the world and find an answer to your questions." So then I had that conception that, okay, mama's giving me an instruction. I should go and figure out things myself. Then I was trying to investigate here and there, especially about life after death. And I was wondering if people die. And that was something that lingered on my mind right from my, say 6-7 years. I was always making some inquiries. Because I came from a family where I had my grandmother's father, I don't know how to call it, great grandfather or whatever. He was a very powerful. Herbologist and a massage therapist. He will use his, he just uses his fingers to touch you. I mean, it's like this Indian Ayurvedic doctor that I went to last time in Vrindavan. He will use his fingers to touch you, massage you, and he will analyze all of the problems that you have. And he will go into the forest to bring roots, leaves and fruits to treat you. And he won't charge you a cent. And when you become cured, you can choose to come and give him anything you want. So people used to flood his place like anything, like a clinic. So then when I was a kid, I used to ask my mom that. They used to call him Adda, their grandfather. So I said, "Mom, why is it that? Why is it that this man, he has all his powers? Why don't all the members of your community have those powers?" As a child, I was asking that. Under 7. So I was inquisitive, in short. And then I remember when I think in grade 3 or grade 4, I lost one of my uncles. He was living with us in the same compound. So I was coming back from school I was going to the compound. So I was whistling, and one of my father's younger sister, she came to me and said, "Hey, shut up, stop." I said, "Why?" The small children, they always got inquisitive. "Why? Why are you asking me not to whistle?" She said, "Your uncle is dead. Your uncle is dead." I don't know. I didn't know what it meant by dead. So anyway, I just had his name, so I went straight to his apartment. And when I went there, he was, lying on his bed, and people were surrounding him. And they were saying, "He's gone, he's gone, he's gone." So I said, "Hey, wait a minute. We say he's gone. Look at him there. He's gone away." And I said, "Oh, come on, you're a small boy, don't do anything." Later, I didn't see him again. For years passed, I didn't see him. So then I was growing up, so I was beginning to figure out, when people die, where do they go? So then when I was working with the judiciary, I met some devotees. And then I bought some book. I think one of them was Life After Death. So when I went home, and I was living by myself. A young man with all living myself. My parents were living in their own place there. You know, young people, once they have small, they don't want to hang out with parents. So I saw this guy. I saw him, he just put on some chadar and mark bodies and all, and people, he was standing by the road, and people like pedestrian path. And I saw that, everybody who was coming was diverted because of that guy who stood there. And I said, "Young man, we're radicals. There's somebody, thing that people are afraid of. We go there, we find out. Who are you?" So I went to meet him. The people are scared and go there. So I went to meet him. I said, "Who are you? What are you doing here?" He was actually opposite my former primary school. So he told me that, he's listening to this book, these books about spiritual life and all this. So I looked around and I bought two books. So I went home. That night I didn't sleep. I just, devoured the literatures. Then I saw that all of the questions that I was, asking in life when I was small till that time, all the questions are answered. I said, "Oh." So I traced their temple after a couple of days. Traced their temple. I got more books, met the president. I went for a Sunday program, met the president. The president spoke with me, and then I became encouraged to be coming there. That was in December 1983. I met a devotee, got the book in December. That same December, towards the end of December, I went to the temple. So then I got a chance to go back to the temple almost every weekend. And when I was on vacation in February 1984, I wanted to spend two or three weeks of my vacation at the temple, the last part of my vacation. So then I went there, and then I was reading proper books, like anything. I was following devotees out for Sankirtan and Harinam, and I was enjoying it. I remember one day, one professor, the president's friend, I went out with him on Sankirtan, and then he told me that, "I've seen how you are acting. If you become a devotee, you do well, But he told me that he cannot become a full-time devotee because his body was attached to his mom. So when, after my holidays, after my vacation, I just felt, "Damn, this work." So I want to resign. So that was how I ended up hanging out at the temple till today. Shri Prabhupada ki
jai.
Maharaj ki
jai. His Holiness Bhakti Vasudev Maharaj.